Hey, this is Kevin from Kevin's Barbecue Joints, and welcome to episode 195 of the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast. And I am extremely excited to bring you my interview with Michael Fulmer. A lot of people just know him as Fulmer. People might not even know his first name, but he is such a nice guy, and I have known him for a very long time. He and J.C. Reed were probably two of my first friends in the barbecue world. He amongst a few other people. Back when there was no Instagram, very little websites about barbecue, no YouTube shows about barbecue, no podcasts. It was just Twitter, pretty much. And he befriended me, and he's always been super caring and generous and thoughtful, and he has an extreme knowledge for barbecue. And in these intros, I usually give a little bit more than I'm going to give you, because even though I've known him for a long time, a lot of things that came out in the interview I had no idea about. I just didn't know his background. I just knew what he did. I knew he and JC were friends, and I knew that they went on barbecue adventures. I knew he started the Houston Barbecue Festival with him, which grew into the throwdowns and additional events, and which they had to cancel this year because of COVID-19. We get all into his past. We talk about what he's doing now. We talk about the Houston Barbecue Festival, and we talk about a lot of life things. It's a really great interview. Fulmer is an amazing guy, and I know you're going to enjoy this and get a lot out of it. Thank you, Fulmer, for taking the time. And this episode is brought to you by Treaty Oak Distilling. You can check them out at treatyoak.com or visit them in Dripping Springs. It's also brought to you by AJ's Custom Cookers. You can check out his stuff at ajscustomcookers.com. or AJ's Custom Cookers on social media. It's got amazing stuff. You'll definitely be interested in checking that out. I've got a website at kevinsbbqjoints.com. Links to all the podcasts, all the YouTube stuff, barbecue news, write-ups, stories, random stuff, pictures, crazy stuff. A wealth of information there. I'm on all the social media at kevinsbbqjoints. If you're just listening to this on the podcast, check out the YouTube channel at youtube.com/kevinsbbqjoints. But at the end, stay safe. I hope you're enjoying these. Reach out if you want. Have a great week. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir.
How are you? How are you? It's nice to finally get a chance to speak with you. We've been trying for a long time.
You know, we're both real busy and things always happen. I'm doing pretty well, actually. I'm healthy. I'm in a safe place. I have plenty of food. You know, I can count like the things I'm grateful for and the things that are going well in my life in comparison to what's happening out in the vicinity, more like in the greater world for a lot of us. So that's a good thing.
And same for me. I feel like there's a lot worse places I could be in, and I could have a lot less supplies and be more worried about my financial situation. I'm not super worried yet, so I have a lot of blessings. Are you in Houston, or are you outside of Houston right now?
So I'm in Houston. I'm in a neighborhood called Montrose, which is right on the edge of downtown, and it's actually one of the few walkable neighborhoods in the city.
Okay.
Meaning, like, I lived here actually for over a year without a car, with no problems whatsoever. Wow. I was working in the area, but I could walk to everything, and that's kind of a rarity in this town. Mm-hmm. You know, Houston, like LA, is like very spread out, very automobile-based, that kind of thing.
Did you grow up in Texas?
So I grew up in the D.C. area, actually in Virginia.
Like I told you before, I don't know a lot about you.
Yeah, I grew up in Alexandria and McLean, Virginia, just outside D.C.
Okay.
And it was a great place to grow up. My parents were Northeasterners. They were both New Yorkers. My dad was, like, the majority of people in that area, government. You know, he worked mostly for DOT and DOD for a little while too. And it was a great environment to grow up in. Very not just beautiful, but very vibrant, very cultured, you know, and a great public school system. So I was really lucky, even though I wasn't the best student, you know. Well, whatever.
But you did enjoy growing up there.
Oh, absolutely. I'm really when I look back to like how grateful I am for a lot of things my parents did, one of them was, you know, raising us in that area. It was just wonderful. Now, no desire to go back there, you know, maybe visit sometime, but I loved it. So, you know, but I always like, you know, new areas, and I love Texas. I love Texas.
What did you go to school for?
So I grew up there, you know, and then left, I guess, in my late teen years. My parents had gotten divorced. My dad had moved to Texas. I didn't really know my dad. So I came down here and kind of got to know my dad and got to know Texas and lived here for several years and then moved away. I moved back east again. I was in New York, DC and Atlanta. And the whole time I was in those areas, this is, you know, my early 20s, I realized how much I missed Texas. I'd never gone to college, or I'd gone to barely a year and just hadn't got it together. And once I kind of got things together internally, I decided to go back to school. I was paying for the majority of it, so I did the community college route, which is a great way to go.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Particularly if you find a good system, which I did in Northern Virginia. And then I transferred to the University of Texas in Austin because I realized I wanted to go to Austin. I was studying film, and I'd gotten into NYU, which was my big dream, I'm going to go to NYU Film School. And when I crunched the numbers, I was like, there's no way I can do this. And my parents offered to lend me money for it. It was too much money. And UT, as an out-of-state student, was still very accessible, and it was a great program. And so I went through the program there in Austin.
Oh, okay.
And that's actually where I got introduced to, barbecue. In my previous time in Houston, I'd gone to a few places. The first place, like a lot of people in Houston, I'd gone to was Good Company.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed the experience of it. The sitting on the, standing in line, watching them cut it, sitting outside on a picnic bench, everyone kind of talking with each other. It was like such a great vibe. But then fast forward to, living in Austin, I went to Salt Lake, actually the day I graduated college, we all went to Salt Lake. And that was a great experience too, going there, outdoors. Of course, I think the pits.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Salt
Lake it's one of the most photographed spots in all of Texas, to be sure. And it was a good experience, but someone asked me this the other day, my first experience with incredible quality barbecue, where I suddenly realized barbecue could be something more than what I'd had, was, Louis Mueller.
I was going to say, that was my guess.
Yeah, shocking, right? Right? The Temple of Smoke, as it's known. And we'd gone there, and I was just like, holy shit.
And Bobby was amazing. There, right? Wasn't Bobby there at the time?
Bobby was there, yeah. I mean, this was before I was really with the barbecue world. I'd worked in the restaurant business the better part of my life, but, I didn't know. So, yeah, we just sat down, and it was just amazing.
And it is an experience, number one, just the setting itself, but the food is different, and it's very peppery. It has that bark that's so unique to the Mueller family. It's this,
It really is. When you look at what John and Leanne, and Ali and all that they're doing, it's just, you see the influence so boldly, yet it's also wonderful to see how each one of them has defined it in their own right.
Yeah, I think John has gone down more the pepper route than they have. They obviously use it, but his is very heavy. So then did you work in the film business at all, in the industry?
So I did that for a while. I worked on some commercials. I did some freelance work. But I had school debt. I had a family member with cancer.
Oh, man.
Just didn't want, it was taking me away. It wasn't, I wasn't getting consistent work, and I had all these bills to pay. So ultimately I made the decision, if I wasn't going to move to LA or back to New York, I got more involved into the restaurant scene, and it was doing quite well, doing mostly front of the house, doing fine dining.
What restaurants at the time?
Well, my first place I worked in Houston was a place called Pappas Brothers Steakhouse.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a high-end steakhouse. I worked there for several years, then went on to a place called Mark's, which at the time, this would be early 2000s, probably, I would call it the best food that there was. Mark Cox was the chef in Houston. He had come from Tony's. And then I just worked at multiple places around since then. For the last... Just to fast forward, for the last 4 years, I've been with Ronnie Killen's restaurant group. Started off at the steakhouse down in Pearland, and then he opened a place called Killen's STQ in Houston, which is this wonderful hybrid of the steakhouse and his barbecue place. Yet it's, nice tablecloths, great flatware, a small but, varied and very well curated wine list, but it's all in a relaxed atmosphere. So you have all these nice things,
that's
you
genius.
Have all this food, but you don't need to put on a suit. You can come casual, or you can come. It can be celebratory. It's just Ronnie really hit a bullseye with that one, and it's just been a great environment to work in. So I've been there for the last 3.5 years.
I see that again. I just don't, and I kind of didn't do a lot of research because I wanted to learn these things about you, because we've known each other for a very long time, just kind of on a periphery level.
I remember when we met. You were helping out John Mueller.
Yeah, I was.
Was that on Congress?
East First.
Yeah, East First. That's right, East First. He bounced around a couple places. I remember we met there. We broke bread there together.
Was it you? JC was there that day too, right? JC.
Yeah. I was with JC. It was Chris them. How I met Chris and how I got involved in the whole barbecue scene. Really, it can dovetail all to really the proliferation of the internet. A girl I know named Jenny Wang started a group called the Houston Chowhounds. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as we all became, you know, she really connected a lot of Houstonians who were into the food scene, but not necessarily professionals. I did work in the field, but a lot of the people who I met didn't. And, you know, I met all these people who are still my good friends to this day. We met so out of a, you know, a, sort of a passion for food in any way, how you define that, whether it was cooking, dining, doing crawls, and all these. So all these like little events started coming together, and it was kind of an open forum for people to do them. I, you know, like the first thing I think I did is I did a coffee crawl, and I hooked up a tour of different roasteries, and
I
didn't sleep till 7 o'clock in the morning that first day. I drank too much coffee that day. Anyway, I met Chris, and we hit it off as great friends, and we were both very much interested in barbecue. Texas Monthly, of course, has always been a force, and I think one of their lists had come out. So we're talking about a good 13 years ago, I think. And me, Chris, and another friend, Collier, decided we were going to do the top five places in one trip. Total rookies. We didn't know what we were doing at all. But let's do it. Let's get in the car. Let's go. And so I think the places that we went to were Snow's, Louis Mueller. We hit Smitty's, Kreutz, and City Market.
City Market, okay.
All in one day. By the time we got to City Market, our last in Luling, we could barely move. We didn't even want to order food. We all had like one little piece of brisket. It was just, you know, and from there, but that's where it all started. From there, Chris and I started doing lots of barbecue crawls throughout the state. And Texas is, you know, it's really lends itself to that experience because you go eat, then you get in the car and you get time to, you know, kind of digest and go to the next place. And as you go, you kind of learn how to, you know, you don't overorder. You learn how to do that. And Chris and I just became good friends.
When I was working with John, I went on my own little crawl. I think I did the three places. I did some, I think that City Market, then I did the three places in Lockhart. And by the time I was at the fourth place, I was dying and I was tweeting. And I had mentioned to someone before, I had tweeted Daniel. And I'm like, how do you do this? And he's like, he was making fun of me because obviously I didn't know it. I was eating huge meals at every single place by myself and trying my best to make it work. But it's...
Yeah. And we tried to do it in little groups. It worked out well that way, that we could all share. We could That's get smart, bigger trays. You know, and the early days of, you know, the halcyon days of Twitter is actually how I connected with a lot of these guys. That's how I met Daniel, met several people all throughout. And so, you know, fast forward, having all these experiences and just enjoying it and doing it on a pretty regular basis. And Texas Monthly came out with their festival. And we had already been talking about what can we do to get something together like this. And we saw, you know, what they had done. You know, and what a great job they did. Really, just I remember that first year, I paid $19. Chris paid, he got the early bird ticket for $18. $18. Oh, what an experience. For all you can eat, you know, this great, incredible barbecue.
I think it was probably the first, the one that I went to. When I was there, I went to a festival, and I think I met JC. I don't know if I had seen you. Maybe. I remember hanging out like it was such a weird experience being with everyone at one place.
Yeah, I remember Daniel still was not the editor.
No.
That happened shortly thereafter. I remember talking with Daniel and Pat Sharp walked by and like in mid-sentence, Daniel just stops talking to us. He walks over and starts talking to Pat.
I remember standing in line like right behind Pat and talking to her, and I was just, I didn't really quite know who she was or how she fit into this whole world. But and then I've even interviewed her once.
Yeah, I saw your interview. It was
so nice. It was like she's such a and I mentioned even to Kelly Yandell, like she kind of, people don't really know who she is in this world now. Like the youngsters that are involved with barbecue, they don't really.
Well, she doesn't. As far as I know, she has no Instagram or no Twitter. Mm-mm. She's not like into the whole social media scene. She's a somewhat reserved person when you first see her. As soon as you get to talk to her, she's so warm. She's so incredibly knowledgeable.
So knowledgeable.
And she's so open to sharing of her experiences. Mm-hmm. So that veneer, which some people may just, it's not off-putting. It's just, you're not quite, you know, sure how to read it. But as soon as you break through that veneer, it's like, she's amazing.
Yeah.
She was actually kind enough when we started the Houston Barbecue Throwdown, which became a judged event, eventually led to Houston Austin Throwdown. She judged several of those for us, which was really nice.
I didn't know that.
People. Yeah.
When was your first festival?
So our first festival, this would have been our eighth. It would have been just a couple of weeks ago. Of course, we were canceled. You know, it was one of those things where when South by Southwest got canceled, that was like the first domino to fall. That's when we started having serious conversations about whether or not we would cancel. You know, of course, there's a lot of things that have, you know, deposits and merchandising and all these expenses that happen before a festival.
Yeah.
And there's a certain like do or die cutoff date that if you don't cancel, you're on the hook for all that money. So, yes, there's money that we lost for sure, but we were able to get most of our deposits back. And I have to say Eventbrite, which is where we sell our tickets through for the Houston Barbecue Festival and through our other events, has been nothing but great. In terms of they refunded all the fees.
Oh, wow.
So that was...
That's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember talking to JC about how, like, you know, you guys got people refunds really quick.
So it was really that first festival that it really, that was the real catalyst. We're like, hey, we could do this.
How hard was it to put it together? Because you hadn't done a festival
It was
before,
just
right?
me and Chris, and we had literally, all we knew was going to that one festival and trying to... Chris has like an IT background. Of course, you know, his architecture was where his school was. Yeah. Mine was in restaurants in front of the house. And so we were both very conscious of wanting it to be, you know, very user friendly, very service friendly. We had been to others, enough events, some of which were good, some of which were bad, that we had an idea. So we just started going around talking to people we knew. I think the first person we talked to was a guy who's not even in the barbecue world, a guy named Jim Gosson, who started a company called Louisiana Foods, which he recently sold a few years ago. And he's somewhat of a sort of a titan in the Houston, Louisiana, Gulf Coast area. And he was very giving of his time and experience. So we just talked to as many people as we could and just prepare ourselves. You know, we kind of always, we knew that we had to put ourselves last. You know, we wanted the idea of like, you know, you buy a ticket, you come in, you have as much barbecue as you want. You're not, you know, having to open your wallet unless you're buying, you know, a t-shirt or something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we made no money for multiple years. We lost money on it. But we kind of had the big picture, you know, like we were in this for the long run.
Do you remember which barbecue spots were in the first one?
God, let me think. Ronnie Killen still wasn't open. He came in as a featured. He was still in pop-up phase. So he had like a separate tent. But the Burns family, which is, you know, Burns Barbecue here in Houston, which is a long time and, you know, well-revered place. They had, you know, dad had died. They had kind of balkanized. And so it was Kathy Burns, Gary Burns. I can't remember the other one. So we had three of the Burnses there. We had Corkscrew was there. They had just gotten going.
Oh, wow.
Greg Gatlin was, you know, the first real kind of real craft barbecue that hit in Houston. And he was there. And it was really, but what got us going with all this was through our travels. You know, we can talk a lot about the food and most of which is amazing, but just the people we met, I mean, I think you can testify to this, just, they're incredible.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I've worked in the restaurant business a long time and people work very hard. Restaurant owners, chefs work crazy long hours and in no way do I invalidate the hard work they do, but nobody works harder than barbecue people, you know? And you saw how hard, you realize like they're not doing this. These people aren't like going to open up the vault and become super rich or super famous. Although, I guess that has happened.
Yeah, that has happened.
Now.
Yes, a little bit.
Yeah.
Who knew? But, who knew that would happen?
Because they love it. They do it because they love it. They, you know, and that passion is just, it really shows through, and that sense of hospitality. And so we just meet so many great people that we're like, what can we do to shine a light on them? What can we do to make their lives better? You know, and that's what it was about. It was about, you know, Houston's very big and spread out. So let's bring us all together and show Houstonians how great barbecue is in this area and how great these people are and turn these people onto it. I mean, that's what we hope for.
And I feel like you've helped shape the Houston barbecue world in a sense, because because of Texas Monthly, Texas barbecue has become what it is. But I feel like because of what you have shone a light on Houston barbecue, and a lot of people probably would not have known about these spots if it wasn't for you guys. Eventually they might have, but I think that, well, yeah, when you do have, and then also it's a great place for people to get to know each other that are not even necessarily cooks or in the barbecue restaurant business, but just people and fans. I think that you've gotten, and it's changed so much because now things are just fanatical.
Well, I mean, this, you know, this pandemic we're going through has put like, you know, a stall on everything. But I mean, it's just like you're wondering, when is it going to plateau? Mm-hmm. Like certain cities, you think Austin is plateaued? There's communities, no. Like you look at Interstellar opened up way up, you know, on in the northeast side, you know, where there's a lot of stuff going on. It's amazing what they're doing. They're shutting down their sandwich shop just so they can do barbecue.
Exactly.
I mean, so there's some room for growth still in Austin. Houston, there's still plenty. Like the west side of this town really didn't have much going on. And now you've got, you know, you've got Brett's Barbecue out there. several other places. It's like there's, it's still growing, and it's amazing. You know, it's amazing to see. You just wonder, is it going to plateau?
And especially now with COVID, it's going to be interesting to see what happens, because it was blowing up so much, and there were so many, like you guys even put the spotlight on a lot of pop-ups that, like pop-ups in the beginning, obviously with Killen, but with Ronnie, but now there was like all like JQ, all these different guys that were popping up that now I wonder if half of them won't be around. I don't know. I hope they all will be, but.
Well, some of them, you know, this is, you know, the classic tale of the weekend warrior. A lot of these guys have full-time jobs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Eddie O, he's got a full-time job. JQ, they've got a full-time job. They do this on the weekends, you know, and so it becomes that, you know, that paradigm of weekend warrior who, you know, there's like the three levels of barbecue. There's serving it to your friends and family. Oh, this is great. Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Then there's serving it to strangers who mm-hmm. validate you. Oh, this is really good. And then the big level, the third level, which is serving it to strangers for money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And like that, like what happened with Will and Nicole Buckman and Corkscrew, like that's the classic, you know, that was the classic example mm-hmm. of how it worked out. And so some of these guys, you know, you see them, you know, going, becoming caterers. Some of them may not go brick and mortar. You know, if anything, the ones who are caterers right now, they are set up. They're in good shape right now.
Yeah, I agree.
For the whole COVID situation, because they can pivot more. They can serve. They're used to serving off-site. They're used to serving, in a sense, to go also.
That's true. And setting up like a drive-through situation or some kind of curbside thing or something, bring it to your car, that they are more. And I think Texas, I was talking to JC last week about this, is that Texas kind of lends itself better to people waiting for barbecue. Like people could wait an hour in their car for barbecue in a line, or a half hour or whatever it is. Whereas here in Los Angeles, people don't have that. It's not built in, but whereas it's kind of...
Yeah, I don't think they're going to go to Slab and wait for 45 minutes in the car.
No.
Right there. They're going to want to get on their phone or have their assistant call Bert, you know, like, hey, send over the brisket and have someone slide through it for you.
Definitely. No.
You know, it's exciting, though, to see what's happening in L.A., you know, and then, you know, Moose Craft, California, there's a lot of room for growth there, and it's really starting to happen.
Yeah, and it's a shame. And I'm sure that, like, barbecue, I think, of any business has the ability to survive this, whereas there's a lot of places that I don't think can. And a lot of locations aren't, the rent isn't as high as it would be, like, on Rodeo Drive for a restaurant or something, or a Sunset
Sure.
Strip. Yeah, so hopefully. But Bert's location on 3rd Street, his rent's not cheap at all.
No, it's not, you know. I think it's most difficult for fine dining places. You know, when you hear about like Canlis in Seattle mm-hmm. selling burgers.
Yeah.
You know,
isn't that crazy?
How are they, you know, the ones that, can they stay open? Can they pivot? You know, no one's going to get Alinea in Chicago to go, you know.
Uh-uh.
But, you know, the barbecue places can pivot. You know, Russell Regal, who I work next door to him, so I see Russell and Misty all the time. And they were really ahead of the game. Like they saw this coming. They were already starting to pivot and like, you know, maneuver their business into to go, you know, even discussing the idea of putting in maybe a to go window that, you know, didn't get worked out.
And being in a constant contact with their customers, I think that was really, really important to let people know this is where we are today, this is where we are tomorrow, this is what's happening. And being really open about that, I think that dialogue really helps.
I couldn't agree with you more. You know, there's already a lot of support for him from the community, but like just putting yourself out there and say, hey, you know, I'm working all the time, you know, this is what's going on, and thank you for your support. You know, it's just, it's connecting with people. It's great.
And here's the ways you could help: get a gift card, do these things. Like it's not putting your hand out. It's just saying, these are the things I need to survive if you want us to be alive on the other side of this.
Yeah. And we are going to come out the other side. It's just, I guess that moment, like we were talking earlier, is that we don't know how that's going to, what's the timeline on that and how that's going to work. Cause it's not going to be, you know, a switch that suddenly flips.
Exactly.
But, like, I feel like I know several places that are in the process of opening here. I can't really talk about some of them, but, you know, that in some way, like I guess Prime Barbecue, the guy in North Carolina, you know, he's really close. He might be perfectly poised that when the construction finally gets done that, you know, wow, okay, open up here. There's, you know, I guess Roger Moose in Oakland, is it?
Oh, that's Mike Horn.
That's right. Okay.
Not Mike Horn, Matt. I've seen him. Matt Horn. Matt.
No, Matt Horn. Matt Horn.
Mike Horn's a guy from my high school.
Yeah. That's right. Matt Horn. Yeah, what Matt Horn's doing in Oakland, like maybe that'll work out. You know, I don't know. I know that, you know, barbecue is thriving. It's still doing okay right now.
So then what year did you guys start having the throwdowns?
A couple of years after we did the festival, once we were just doing that once a year, Chris came up with the idea for the throwdown. We were really conscious that the festival itself not be a competition. You know, it was a celebration. And that's what it was. But then a lot of the barbecue guys came to us going, well, we want to do a competition. We want to compete. You know, they have that, you know, competitive quality, mm-hmm. even though it's a great fraternity here. And so we came up with the idea, you know, Chris came up with the idea for the throwdown, like one barbecue. It was a smoked dish, something that they could serve several hundred people, something that, you know, has smoked element and something that they could put on their menu, not like, you know, smoked abalone with unicorn foam, you know, not tweezer food, you know, it was something that could be replicated, you know, conceivably. And then we got really good judges, you know, like people like Pat Sharp, Wayne Mueller, you know, we always had pit masters and well-established food critics doing a blind tasting. And that started, and that got great response from that. That led to Houston, Austin, you know, kind of doing that. And then last year we did something called the Tex-Mex Barbecue Block Party.
Yeah, that's
where we, you know, Hispanic and Latino pitmasters. And we weren't sure how this was going to go. There's so many here. It's such a great community. I'm like, oh, is there going to be like 12 briskets with tortillas here, you know? And it was amazing. It was amazing to see the quality, to see the enthusiasm, you know, from Beaumont down to the outer areas of Houston. These guys came. It was fantastic. We can't wait to do that again.
Were people trying to pair things with beer, or was that not part of the equation? I know you guys have,
no,
like right I mean, now, don't you guys usually have a brewery connect?
St. Arnold's is a local brewery here,
yeah.
A fairly mid-size, you know, it's a mid-sized craft brewery, and they kind of hitched their wagon to us as a sponsor and vice versa. And the beautiful thing about them is they have a beer hall that is inside that can fit about 400 people.
Oh, wow.
So we can do an event in Houston and not have to worry about the rain. We can do an event in the summer, you know, and not worry about, you know, 98 degree heat with high humidity. And it's, you know, it's kind of perfect for that.
Oh, that's nice. And like St. Arnold wasn't, what's the guy's name that from St. Arnold? I'm trying to think. There was a guy who was, I don't know if he's a rep or.
Frank?
Frank, yeah, Frank. Yeah, Frank Mancuso or something.
Frank, he works for, Frank works for St. Arnold's in Austin.
Okay, is that
and
what it is?
He is a barbecue fanatic. Actually, a lot of their staff is. Some of them buy tickets to all our events, even though they can get them free from their company or from us. They just
great.
Call, like, they insist on paying. It's like they're very, you know, that's very heartening when you see people who you're like, hey, look, let me take care of you. Let me come. You're like, no, we want to support this. You know, we like this.
That's awesome. So what do you guys think? Do you think it'll be 2021 before the next festival? Are you going to kind of hold off? Because planning stages, right? It takes a long time to plan.
No, the festival itself, we canceled it for this year. One, because it's like about 3,000 people. It's outside. So you can't do it from May to through September. You can't do outdoor events are very dicey because of the weather. And then fall just gets so full. So we're going to do the festival next year. We already have the date, March 28th. We already have multiple events planned, you know, in terms of throwdowns, block parties, stuff like that. And some of them are on schedule. We can't announce yet until we know, you know, when we can do this.
But as soon as you can, you'll announce that. And that will, what's the best way for people to contact you guys or to follow what's going on?
Go through our website, which is houbbq.com, www.houbbq.com. And same thing with Twitter and with our Instagram. It all connects to that. Our website was really antiquated from when we first started out, and we finally retooled that so it's a little more user-friendly. You can get on a newsletter and connect with us.
And you guys have news, too, on this.
Yeah, we're finally expanding a lot of that. You know, we, of course, had these really grandiose ideas for it, but ultimately, it's me and Chris, J.C. Reed, J.R. Cohen, you know, runs the social media most of the time, and several people who, that's really, when it comes down to us, just really kind of like us three guys
yeah.
during the full part of the year, you know, of course during the festival and for events. I mean, we've got staff that have been working with us, you know, and for us started. So how is the barbecue scene in California working out?
It was growing like crazy, but Moose Craft Barbecue, they've gone on hiatus just because they felt like then they were cooking out of a specialty kitchen that they used, a craft kitchen in downtown Los Angeles, and they were doing the curbside service and they created an online ordering system, but it just became for them, they felt like it's, especially too, as things were ramping up here, they didn't feel it was 100% safe, or they didn't feel like they didn't want to take any risk either for the customer or for themselves. And they have two young kids, and they just figured, right, as it's, because we've been getting here in Los Angeles, they've been talking about like this Friday, which would be Friday the 17th, I think, is the peak, the potential peak for deaths as well as infections. So people just, you know, were really worried. And so they've taken a little hiatus. They were doing vacuum sealed stuff. Flat Point, which is a new place. I don't know if you had heard about them. They're in, they're in Santa Monica. Yeah. And he's doing funky, really cool stuff with lamb and everything. He has four or five meats that he does cryovac 7 days a week with ordering online. Great. Bert's back open 7 days a week, but they're doing mostly Postmates and to go. And it's a very short, small staff. And it's right. Like, you know, people are trying. Adam Perry Lang still has their kind of interesting barbecue thing that they do. I think it's Thursday through Sunday.
Yeah, I've been following. He's been doing some really interesting stuff too. Yeah, amazing.
And yeah, and his like a dry aging room is crazy. And so there's that, and there's a lot of people, you know, little pop ups here and there. But it's not. I think things are kind of on hold essentially until we kind of ferret out this whole COVID thing, and a lot of restaurants, like people the delivery system too is a lot of people are worried about ordering delivery because the restaurants don't make as much money, so it's better to do takeout. And there, but you don't see a lot of cars on the streets right now here.
Same thing here. I was in my car yesterday. I had to run a quick errand, and I decided to wash my car too, and it was just weird being in my car. Like I think I filled up for gas like once in the last month, you know, and of course gas prices here is ridiculously low. It's so strange.
Yeah, it does feel like it has that weird apocalyptic, even though you don't feel like zombies are about to jump or like an alien attack, but it feels like it's different. It feels like almost, because I grew up in the 70s, like with the 70s, it's reminiscent of that kind of traffic. And there's still people that are, like, I think people are driving faster. I don't know, maybe they just need to get from point A to point B as quickly as possible. But it's, and I'm seeing a lot of people now finally with masks walking around, and my apartment complex is very quiet. I rarely see humans, and that's just, and I live above a Morton Steakhouse, and so and there's valets, and so those guys would always, you know, when I'd walk the dog, and I'd see them. Now they're gone, so there's no, and the Morton's is shut down, which is strange. Like they don't even have to go, and well, I guess it's high end steakhouse, but it's just eerily quiet. I'll go down to get the mail, and there's no humans, just cars.
I'm fortunate. I live in an area where there is, you know, I'll see some, you know, pedestrian traffic. But yeah, of course, yeah. It's so much quieter. It is strange. I really feel very confident we're going to come out on the other side of this.
So
but I also know it's going to be a slow haul back up. Mm-hmm. What's interesting for us here in Houston is that we went through this about 2.5 years ago with Hurricane Harvey. But we were like, you know, we were a special little kid, you know, Houston, you know, shut down for like, almost, you can't get out, all this. And that was great. But now this is the whole country, if not like the whole world, this is happening too.
Because I'm seeing a lot of empty, like we're still seeing shelves that are empty. And it's like, you would see that maybe like with a Hurricane Harvey, because people would just buy everything, but it would get restocked because the rest of the United States was still running. Like, this is like
right.
People are pulling from, and people don't know like how long the lockdowns will be. I'm not as concerned about getting it as much. And I kind of, to be honest, I think I might have even had it. I want to be checked for antibodies because I don't know if I had it in a mild form a couple months ago, because there's been times I was, in January, I was really sick for a couple weeks, and they're wondering, they want to do a huge antibody test to see if a lot of us might have already had it and are immune to it.
I guess that's kind of like the big deal is how are we going to get everyone tested like they did in South Korea.
True.
And so I'm confident that that will happen. It's just, you know, hopefully sooner than later. It's just this next month will be very, I mean, it's strange so far, I gotta say.
But it is, like, it's nice because I do find I'm checking in with people more. I'm definitely, people are being, they're being more human, I think. That's, if that is even possible. But I think that people are just understanding that we're all like, rich, poor, whatever race, whatever, we all could get this. Like, so it's, and we're all being locked down.
Yeah, I agree. My neighbors, everyone around, I see, you know, everyone, you know, if you see the mailman, everyone, you know, like, yeah. We're also really lucky here in Texas. We have a grocery store chain called HEB.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
Yeah. And they, you know, there's a great article in Texas Monthly on how they started preparing for this like 12, 13 years ago and how they started ramping up in December. And that's actually where I shop. You know, I usually go 2 to 3 times a week. Now it's more like every almost like 10 days.
Yeah.
But it's just it's such a safe and well-controlled environment, you know, that we're real lucky to have them.
Yeah, that was one thing that when I go to HEB, I always wish that there was one in Los Angeles because it was so I'd take pictures and show people like, you can't believe what they have here. Like, and even like the sausage selection was
the best. The one by me is small. But it doesn't matter. It's just, it's great.
So what? So how is Ronnie handling this? What are you guys doing differently? Are the restaurants?
So his barbecue is still going strong, you know, to go and delivery. You know, he in recent years has expanded. He went from having just the steakhouse to the barbecue to now it's like he's got a burger joint, STQ, another steakhouse open, you know, and he's scheduled to open another place called STX, you know, hopefully this year. So actually he was doing a pop-up today. He's done multiple pop-ups, you know, sometimes, you know, I've worked one or two of them also where we're giving out sandwiches, you know, chicken sandwiches to hospitality workers, mm-hmm. You know, selling some chicken, just, he's out there taking help and trying, you know, being part of the community and taking care of people as best he can. It's like, that's one of the things, like if you talk to restaurant owners, whether they be a small proprietor, but like the bigger the company is, you realize like, how stressful it is for them to tell people that you're furloughed or they're being, you know, laid off or, mm-hmm. you know, like, you know, he really feels a strong responsibility towards his staff and being part of the community. That's a big deal for him. So, you know, he wants to be out there and helping people as much as he can. It's great.
So the burger place is doing to go?
Yeah, they're still doing to go.
Okay.
I have not been down there because that's in Pearland, which is about, you know, 35 minute mm-hmm. drive from me. You know, I've been kind of staying close. I don't think I've driven more than 5 minutes, 6 minutes in the car since this all started.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, which is weird, especially for you in L.A.
Yeah, oh yeah, and I could spend like 2 hours driving, yeah, like 15 miles. But still, I'm a driver, too. I'm that kind of person. I really enjoy driving. I love going up to like Santa Barbara, Central Coast, anywhere. And I feel so constrained. I was wondering, too, like if someone could do a project, it would driving across the United States and document it. It would be interesting to see how different things are across the United States. But it's not safe, and people aren't really allowed to.
Now, do you eat when you travel? Do you eat barbecue every like in all new places?
I try to, yeah. Like if I'm in San Luis Obispo, yeah. I'll try. Like it's not always great, but also too, who's the judge?
No. And that's, I do the same thing, and I know Chris does this too. You know, sometimes he does actual trips for it. But like, I mean, I was in South Florida. This is before Billy Durney opened up there. You know, being going through, you know, mm-hmm. Fort Lauderdale, Miami. You know, not a whole lot of good stuff going on there. But it's like it's changing everywhere, mm-hmm. you know, like in New York, you can find really good barbecue. Yeah. D.C., things are changing. It's like it's kind of exciting to see the Texas, Central Texas model kind of exported elsewhere.
I love that.
Yeah. But then and then people are kind of making it their own, too. It's not about necessarily saying, hey, let's adhere directly to this. You know, it's an exciting time. I look forward to being able to travel again and do that kind of thing.
Yeah, same with me. And I was just on the cusp because I've been taking care of my mom through 2 knee replacements, a shoulder replacement, and lumbar spinal fusion. So I was like just at the end to ready to kind of branch out, like, because that's why I've been in this cave doing interviews. But now
I applied for my global entry TSA pass.
Oh, I was just about to get that too.
Yeah, and I was applying for TSA, and it's like $25 more, you get the global entry. So I got it finally. And I was like, okay, I can't wait to, like, you know, use this, you know? But of course, now it's like all, you know, who knows?
Are you getting food to go at all from barbecue spots?
Yeah, I got some from Truth, from, you know, Leonard and Corey and those guys at Truth.
Oh, cool.
I had some from Pit Room, you know, a couple other places, and I'll probably go to a place or two. I'm trying to do that about once a week. I'm trying to stay, you know, I'm staying in. trying to adhere to like the whole self-quarantine, but you know, once a week or so going and patronizing some of these places. I might drive up to Tejas soon.
Yeah, that's nice. I guess JC was saying he opened up, I think it was a brisket from some brisket from Tejas, and he could smell it, and it kind of brought back that sensory memory of being there. Yeah, that's amazing. You have, and Houston now has such a wealth of choices. Like, you have to drive, but it's so amazing.
Amazing how just in the last 5 years, how it's really blown up. You know, there was some great traditions here, but now, you know, it's just, know, the bar is high. You know, Aaron set that bar very high for everybody else, you know, and he's so giving with his information. That's another thing you'll find with a lot of, I find with a lot of barbecue owners and pitmasters. Like Wayne is like, he'll tell you exactly how he does things. This is how I do it, you know? And that's when you start to realize how hard barbecue is when you see people who share the information. They say, well, it seems kind of simple. Like, maybe simple in an idea, but execution's a whole different
level. Exactly. The concept's easy, but it's easier. Yeah. But yeah, but it's the actually doing it and doing it on a consistent basis and doing it week in and week out with all weather, all different types of weather.
Right. And it's exciting for us to see new guys coming up, like Koi Brothers Barbecue.
Yeah.
JQ, you know, all these guys, you see them and you see them improving, you know, because we go to between Chris and I, we hit a lot of the pop-ups on a fairly regular basis. And it's great to see that just the growth. It's really exciting.
I hope that the next time we speak, it's actually in person and at some spot in Houston, because I cannot wait to visit. And it's tough too, because I've done some of these interviews. I have so many people to see, and so many, like, I almost have to come in like stealth and not tell anybody.
You can go to a hotel under a different name.
Yeah, know. Exactly.
We'll have the limo and the green room ready and all that. Chris and I are looking forward to coming out to California too.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And breaking bread with you for sure.
Definitely.
All right, brother. All right, take care.
Have a good week. Be safe.